This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleague on my far left, playing injured this week, Richard Pollock, broken finger. Guy in the middle, returning from 2 weeks of staycation, Ezzy Ginsberg, and producer Remus gets us on and off the air. 2 hours of hockey talk ahead for you on this Saturday morning. Joining us in about 1 hour's time, Adam Kimmelman. He's the deputy managing editor of NHL.com. He's in Lake Placid, New York, where a World Junior Hockey evaluation camp and tournament is currently underway. We'll talk to Adam about everything that's going on in Lake Placid in about 90 minutes' time. AJ Zeglin is going to join us. He's a personal trainer at Focus Fitness here in Winnipeg. He's going to talk about some of the training regimens that NHL players would be undertaking in the off-season right now. So we have all that in store for you today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news. There's not a lot of it, but whatever's there is at IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, good morning. Ezzy, welcome back. How was your vacation?
I appreciate it. Good morning. It's good to be back.
You appreciate what?
Well, you just welcomed me to the show.
Oh, okay.
Welcome back,
yeah.
and all that. But no, it's good to be back. You guys had me on towards the end of last weekend's show, but I got to say, again, it was very odd to have those 2 weeks off, but it was nice, you know. You gather your thoughts, you know, you get some fresh air, you go for walks, all that good stuff.
Did you go for any walks?
I went for some walks, yes. I did. I went for some walks, some runs.
You didn't
I did
run.
Some speed walking.
Oh, speed walking.
Yep. But I'm back. Vacation's over.
Mm-hmm.
Back to work.
That's good. I'm glad to hear
we're back in the office.
I'm glad to hear that you got your game face on. Richie, what happened to the digit over there? What happened to the pinky finger?
I broke it slamming my hand on the table after finding out Ezzy was on vacation. Or playing baseball, one of the two.
Or playing baseball already. Anyways, let's get started right away. It's sort of the quiet time in the NHL now that all the signings, for the most part, have been taken care of. Nobody went to salary arbitration, but now that those dates have passed and all the players have been signed, sort of into a quiet time here on the NHL calendar, really the quietest time on the NHL calendar. But there's still some very helpful NHL players out there who are unrestricted free agents that I think could help some teams. I want to start with a guy that is near and dear to the hearts of hockey fans here in Winnipeg, and that's Timu Solani, because a report came out earlier this week that he's considering his options still.
Mm-hmm.
By considering his options, do you think that there's a possibility he comes back to the NHL, but it not be in Anaheim?
You know, guys, we're talking about, you know, free agents that are left, and Timu Solani, to me, is one guy who is unquestionably returning to the one city that, you know, he wants to finish his career in. And, you know, there was a lot of talk about, you know, Winnipeg possibly putting in, an offer or trying to land him here. But, Richie, if he's exploring his options, if Timu Solani at 42 years old is exploring his options, what that means is that he's deciding if he wants to play one more year or not. There's no indications that it's not Anaheim. And until we find something that would lead us to believe that he's going to another city, whether it's Philadelphia or Vancouver, wherever. I mean, he's deciding if he wants to play one more year, is he not? I mean,
he kind of left it open in terms of other teams. And I mean, I think when you're talking about that, Ezzy, you're probably talking about Detroit, something like that, that he thinks he can have a better shot to win the cup. I mean, people talk about the Jets and there's a certain amount of nostalgia there, and I understand that. Of course, everybody would like to see him play in Winnipeg. Jets don't have the cap space. They have $2.32 million of cap space. He likely is going to want $3 to $4 million to play. That's not to say that they couldn't clear it. They actually, right wing is a strength for them. It's not to say that they couldn't move people around or have, you know, they can make it happen in theory.
If Timu Solani comes to the Winnipeg Jets and says, I want to play one more year, and I want to play it in Winnipeg. And this is, I know,
make
this
it happen.
I know this is emotionally exploitive,
right,
in discussing it. Let's be honest, because it's not going to happen. Do the Winnipeg Jets move, you know, for the most part, heaven and earth to make it happen for that 1 year?
Yeah, I think also because it makes your team better. He can score. And if he can make your team better and you're trying to make it to the playoffs, why wouldn't you? You have a gaping hole left wing on the third line. So if you move Frolik to the left side, you know, there you go. Then your team's looking a lot better. Maybe you put him with Oliokun and a countryman. And you say, okay, I mean, it makes your team better. You do it. It's a no-brainer. This team is trying to make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So 100%. But would he move from Anaheim, which is probably arguably a better team, especially after last season, probably inarguably a better team.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at playing with top-end talent. Getzlaf, Perry, just don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And you're looking at playing in Anaheim, the warm weather. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
There's no pressure on him
in
Anaheim.
That's just it. The other thing is, I don't necessarily think the pressure is an issue, Drew. If he wants to win the cup, then you're looking at who would he go to win the cup.
Sure.
So other teams have certainly a better shot than Winnipeg.
And I really believe, again, I mean, I know it came out that there were two other teams aside from Anaheim that were in the mix, and I tend to believe that that's not realistic. And this is why I really believe Team Isolani's got a cup, so it's not like he's chasing a Stanley Cup right now at this point.
He can still have a cup and want to chase a cup.
Okay, but...
But he's not Daniel Alfredson in trying to win a cup.
Right, but I tend to believe, and guys, let's remember that Team Isolani, for many years, because there were years where he had the injuries, he signs late in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And, and a guy like Timu Solani is able to get away with that because of who he is. And he can take his time. And, you know, the Ducks have said that, you know, take as much time as you need. And, you know, we're just speculating because it's the second week of August and he still hasn't signed. But I would be shocked if one of two things happens. He decides that he wants to hang them up, which I don't think he's going to do. Or he returns to Anaheim.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're probably right. You know, you look at Detroit as a team people would talk about because they take on veterans. They have no cap space, $300,000. They haven't even signed Dan Cleary.
And Richie, we're talking about UFAs. We'll get into Damian Brunner.
Yeah, another one.
They don't have the cap space for him. Nyquist isn't signed.
That's also true. So, I mean, you're exactly right, Ezzie.
Detroit,
so.
And you know, when you talk about, again, for the players at this point in the season who remain unsigned.
Right.
There are only a few that are in that same class of Timu Solani where they might want to be going to a team that has a better chance than the team that they were on last year. But for him, I don't see that being the motivation for him. I think he's well planted in California, and he's deciding if he wants to play one more year or not.
Yeah, and also the thing is, you know, Timu Solani is going to be a power play guy essentially at this point in time in his career.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to be that effective. He can still move really well. For his age, it's incredible how well he still skates. But overall, I mean, you're looking at him essentially a power play performer, a little bit of even strength production, but, you know,
yeah,
on a really good team, you can even throw him in the third line on another team, probably second line right wing.
Right, but... Anyways, it's like you said, Ezzie, it's the middle of August, and it's one of those things that's fun to speculate on, but we would all be surprised to see him anywhere else. As much of as a nice story it'll be, probably the only time we're going to see Timu Solani, I would suspect, will be that second home game of the year, if he does play, that second home game of the year, that Sunday game in October. I think it's the...
Don't underrate the Olympics, Drew, too.
Right, certainly. The Olympics would be a driving consideration there. Sunday, October 6th against the Anaheim Ducks, I think, will be the only time we'll see Timu Solani in Winnipeg this year.
Right. And, I mean, that's a small consolation. I mean, Jets fans will still have a chance to possibly see him play. So he's not going to be wearing a Winnipeg Jets jersey, but we'll get to see him play again. We didn't get to see him play last year. We did 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to look forward to. And I know that for most fans that were at that game and watching that game on TV, the first year I'm talking about, the Jets-Ducks game in Winnipeg.
The boo-yay game.
People still say that was one of the highlights.
It was one of my favorite games of that year.
Absolutely.
Other free agents still on the market. You look down the list, and a lot of the guys are sort of veterans. But the one guy that still jumps out to me more than anyone else as being still probably pretty close to his prime is Damian Brunner, ex of the Detroit Red Wings. Mm-hmm. at any, are you, I mean, how surprised are you that on August the 10th, Damian Brunner is still unsigned heading into the upcoming NHL season?
You know, surprised if you asked me on June 30th or July 4th, I guess, that he, you know, when would he be signed? Not that surprised based on the fact that he appeared to be asking for close to $4 million at one point there. So, I mean, the Devils didn't desperately sign him. The Red Wings, I mean, Mike Babcock apparently isn't a fan. And I think other teams probably noted that as well. I'm not completely shocked based on his contract demands, Drew. And the question is, you know, has he done enough in that NHL season to garner that much money? Of course not. So, I mean, he needs to probably sign a one-year deal. Maybe some, you know, some incentives in there. And then try and cash in on the market after that. But, I mean, the ego or his agent's advice, one of the two or both, have been obstacles in terms of his furthering his NHL career.
Further to your point, he's played really – I mean, he's got 26 points last year in 44 games. Most of the rest of his career has been played overseas.
Yeah.
What in that season last year would indicate to anybody that he's a $4 million a year player?
What's interesting, though, about that is – I believe in the last 20 or so games, he had 2 points. He had a terrible finish last year. I don't know the number off by hand, but I know that the last he really struggled towards the second half of last year's shortened season. And it's surprising, Drew, because of the hype that was around Damian Brunner and how he had the playing relationship with Henrik Zetterberg in Switzerland. And, you know, Richie nailed it. I mean, a guy like Damian Brunner, and it's, I think it's really interesting what's happening in Detroit because they didn't want to pay Filppula. He was asking for big-time dough. Damian Brunner's asking for big-time dough. And they really haven't proven that they deserve that, especially on a contract more than 1 year. Damian Brunner is a good player, and he brings over, you know, quite an impressive resume from Switzerland. But in the NHL, he's still not established. And at this point, he's a gamble. He didn't quite work out with Zetterberg in the NHL. It doesn't always translate like that. And I think that is something that's preventing Detroit from signing him. And also, Richie, like we said, they don't have the cap space right now.
Kenny Holland also takes into account Mike Babcock's preferences when building a team. There's a good relationship there. Mike Babcock didn't like Yuri Hudler.
That's right. He went to Calgary for big money last year.
Let him go as well.
Year.
I mean, they wouldn't have probably let him go if it was $2 million that he signed for. But the idea is that there's communication between the two. And they just determine exactly what they need from a player. So that's a red flag, I think, for a lot of teams, too.
It's a red flag, Richie. And I think it's the proof is in these guys going to other teams and not being as successful on Detroit. You think, okay, he's on the second or third line of Detroit. He's going to go to Calgary and light it up. Yuri Hudler's a really good player. But I don't think Yuri Hudler was ever a 70-point player. He's a good, solid offensive player.
Yeah, and he had a good
veteran,
year. Yeah.
And he had a pretty good year in Calgary. But When you expect something, or you've established a certain price for yourself, and you know the rumor is that he's asking for $3.5 to $4 million. Well, based on his finish to last season, I don't think anybody's really biting at that price.
I would agree with you. He had a decent playoffs. That's worth noting. He had 9 points in 14 playoff games. So I mean, he did show up for the Red Wings in the playoffs, but. This is a guy who I think it's safe to say if you pointed to one of the big losers in free agency this offseason, Damian Brunner is going to be right up at the top of your list. And I'm not sure where he ends up signing, but you're probably right. It's probably a 1 or 2 year deal at a lot less money than he's been asking for. You know,
there were a lot
any
of,
team that comes to mind?
I was going to say that there was a hot rumor that he was going to sign with the Devils, especially after Ilya Kovalchuk decided to go back to the KHL.
Right.
But you know, the Devils have signed Jágr since then, and they haven't signed Brunner. And when you consider that they've signed Ryan Kloh and Michael Ryder to the big contracts, not to mention Travis Zajac's contract last year, that was the only team that was hot on Damian Brunner's trails. But now it seems like there's a good chance he might go back to Switzerland. So.
Well, it's one hell of an NHL career then. 1 year, badly misplay your hand, and then you end up back in Switzerland.
That's a problem. I mean, that's when you're exactly right, Drew, overplaying your hand. And so there's other options on the market here, which we're going to talk about. That also hurts him.
Sure.
And, you know, what you're seeing here, and we're going to get a little more into this, what you're seeing here is a lot of the players who are involved, you know, the veteran guys, they talk about protecting the players in terms of the negotiation with the PA. What happens is, we talked about it last week, we'll talk about it again, the big guys get their money, the middle guys even get their money, the young guys get their entry-level deals, and the veterans on those fourth or fifth contracts who aren't what they once were get squeezed. And you look at this list, it's all veterans, guys who aren't what they once were but can probably help a team, that are asking for pay cuts but aren't even getting those pay cuts. Again, they're getting less.
Let's talk about that after the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by our friends at the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org. The Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba, we see more than numbers. Gentlemen, continuing on our look at some of the still unrestricted free agents in the NHL that may help a team, you know, you scroll down that list there, and you mentioned, you know, that a lot of them are veterans. A guy like Peter Mueller, I mean, he's only 25 years old. He's got a lot of talent. He's had some injury concerns in the course of his career. Is this a guy who's going to get a sort of like Kyle Wellwood did in that first year with the Jets, get a one-year, $1 million contract, you know, a couple days before a training camp to go in somewhere and try and win a spot?
Yeah, I think you're right about that, Drew, you know, because he's talented. But, you know, he's gone through transformations in his career, bulking up, losing speed, lightening up, you know, maybe some character issues and questions there. And he had a good start last year in Florida and kind of, you know, calmed down throughout the remainder of the season. And, you know, them not retaining him is probably a little bit of a sign, too. I think what you're seeing is teams are taking reads off of other teams. You know, you look at Florida, you say, okay, there's a young base there. It's an amazing amount of young talent in the system. Why wouldn't they want a guy like this around? And then maybe, you know, some contract demands are also obviously factors here as well. But, I mean, he's a guy who is better than, you know, to me, he's probably better than replacement level. And so you'd probably want a guy like that to come in and see if he can play with other talented players and create some, you know, some offense.
Remember, we were talking about it last year, and, you know, scoring is really always a premium in the NHL. And when you're talking about depth players and scorers and defensemen and filling needs, I think, you know, a Kyle Wellwood to Winnipeg on a one-year contract is actually a good analogy, Drew. And I'm sure that's why you said it.
Generally. But on that point, you know, we said last year, I said on the show, you know, might as well sign a guy like Mueller as opposed to Jokinen, young guy, a little bit more upside, and you don't necessarily know what you got. Whereas Jokinen, you know what you got, and he costs you more.
Right. And I don't believe that. I think Peter Mueller is maybe just in a bad situation that his last few years haven't been his best, and he's probably a victim of that. So I think, you know, it was at the trade deadline last year we were talking about this. We were saying, you know, that's a pretty good pickup, and now we're looking at Peter Mueller and we're saying, okay, you know, late 20s. You know, I can't believe that for a guy like that, a former first rounder, his career is over at this point, at least his NHL career.
Yeah, mid-20s, 25 years old.
That's right. I mean, this isn't a guy who
can play center and wing, too.
Yeah, I mean, he's got some versatility. He's not a guy that's old by any stretch of the imagination. He's certainly got a lot of tread left on his tires.
Yeah, he's had concussion issues, too, Drew.
Yeah, he's had concussion issues, certainly, so that's a concern. But, you know, still. What about a guy like Brendan Morrow? Now, he's on the sort of the other side of the coin in that he's a grizzled veteran and he's been through a ton of NHL games and he's got a ton of miles on his body.
Yeah.
But, you know, is he at the point now where he can't contribute? I mean, you would think that his leadership would still be worth something.
I agree with that. You know, he can hardly move out there. He's never a good skater, but he's lost a step. But can he go to the net? Can he create offense from that in that respect and maybe on your second power play unit? Can he have a leadership, create or fill a leadership void in the locker room? I think certainly he can. I think he'll be useful to a team, 100%. I mean, you're talking third, fourth line left winger there. Not talking top two anymore. But he can still be an effective player, I think, good in the room. And there has to be a spot for him somewhere.
Brendan Morrow last year, you know, and we covered this at the trade deadline, and, you know, everybody remembers Pittsburgh loaded up big time and picked up Morrow and Jerome Iginla and Douglas Murray, and it didn't work out for Pittsburgh, and they got knocked out of the playoffs, and it kind of, you know, didn't turn out the way Ray Shiro wanted it to turn out, with, you know, Iginla getting his cup and Morrow getting his cup, bringing all the captains to Pittsburgh, right? But now Pittsburgh's looking at their team, and they signed Letang to the extension. They signed Malkin to the extension. Mm-hmm. For that matter, they signed Dan Bylsma to the extension. They decided, okay, well, that was it. They were rental players.
Mm-hmm.
They were rental players for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And, you know, as far as Brendan Morrow goes, you know, he's still able to contribute. And he's probably got, you know, only one or two good years left in the NHL. But I think, speaking of the veteran guys that are probably asking for, you know, in the $3 or $4 million range, that's Brendan Morrow, right? So, same thing with Solani. If you want Brendan Morrow, you're gonna pay a little. And, you know, if we're, you know, just off the top of my head, we're talking about teams. A team that I always thought he would fit in on is Montreal, a team that needs a veteran, mm-hmm. gritty guy, even though he's smaller. And
he's tough, though.
He's tough. Yeah. A team like Montreal could benefit from him, and a team that was rumored to be high on him was the Canucks.
Yep.
And another team that could use that grit and his leadership and all that, because of we know all the history of the Canucks and the problems they've had in the playoffs over the last couple of years. But he's probably one of the guys that I'm most surprised at, actually, that he hasn't signed, because of his pedigree with, you know, the Canadian team and the Stars and all that.
Another thing here is the players on this list of free agents left over right now. And I think we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, that there is a clear and there's a noticeable fact about these players, in that they're for the most part slow skating guys. And that doesn't mean they were always slow skating guys, but the years of, you know, the tread on the tire is they've worn down a bit. And you look at it, and we've mentioned it before, Roman Hamrlik, Ryan Whitney, you know, before Antropov signed, Brendan Morrow, all those guys can't skate at the level of the NHL anymore, at least to be that effective player, you know, effective players, Douglas Murray, Adrian Acoin, you know. So you look at it and you say, you know, Hal Gill, all these guys are slow players. So they have to be able to fit into a team that has a lot of speed and can complement those speedy players by providing something. Like a Hal Gill, he's not offensively adept, okay? And he's a slow skating guy. But if you put him with a really good skater in your third pairing, and you use him against the other team's third or fourth lines, and then to kill penalties, he can be effective in a way, and he can be good in the room and a calming influence. You know, certainly be an upgrade over a guy like an Adam Party. Now, I'm not talking leaps and bounds, but Adam Party to me is not an NHL defenseman. And Hal Gill has a pedigree of being able to block shots and kill penalties and such. You know, both slow skating guys, but there's a reason why Gill's been in the league for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I think that's the theme. Now, guys, we mentioned Brendan Morrow, another guy's like Danny Cleary. I mean, a guy who can help you on the left side, a guy who can do little things, a guy who's been through, you know, his own personal battles, and he's shown tremendous perseverance. I think he can be useful. I mean, you look at other guys too. You know, Mikhail Grabowski, though, is the one who kind of stands out to me.
Well, that's where I was going next, especially in this day and age when there's supposedly a premium on centers. Every team can never have enough centers. Mikhail Grabowski, he's 29 years old. Last year was a disaster, but the year before, 51 points. The year before that, 58 points. The year before that, 35 points in 59 games. The year before that, 48 points. This is a guy who's really, you can pencil in for almost 45 to 55 points. Last year notwithstanding.
Ribeiro leaves Washington. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that seem like a lot? I know you read a little bit about that. Doesn't it seem like a logical place for him to land? I mean, I know Brooks Light can play center if they need him to. They probably want him to play wing/third line center if they can. But, I mean, wouldn't he fit in well? Maybe you put him up with Ovechkin. You put Backstrom with an Erat or something like that. I don't know how they're going to do their lines. But the idea is that it gives you an offensive force after you've lost a guy like Ribeiro. Like him or not, Ribeiro certainly added an offensive element and made that power play even better than it was.
I think Washington's a good fit. And again, another team that was linked was the Devils because of the fact that there's that hole there without Kovalchuk there. But I don't think... I believe that Grabowski, because of the number that's attached to him, based on that five-year contract that the Leafs offered him, he's going to be asking for similar type of money. Probably not as much, Richie. But
he's getting paid right now.
He is.
Sure, because the Leafs bought him out, yeah. So he's still getting his contract.
That's a good point. You might get him a little bit less because of that. But, again, scoring at a... Those guys, aren't a lot... If you look at a lot of the guys that are left... He's probably got the most offensive talent. I mean, you're talking about, yeah, Solani's out there, but when you're talking about some of these other guys, Cleary and Morrow, these are guys at this point that aren't probably arguably not 50-point guys anymore. And, you know, his comments didn't help the public perception of Grabowski when he left Toronto. I don't think that has blackballed him at all. I don't think that helped him at all either. I think he could have left Toronto, taken his money.
Yeah.
Instead, he decided to
chirp
and throw everybody under the bus.
Grabowski's interesting, and I know there's just that Carlisle stigma now that's with him. But at the same time, I mean, he was utilized in a role this year that was not a scoring role. We've talked about that, you know, defensively, checking center.
And that's some of his comments to Jonas Siegel on TSN 1050 were about that.
Yeah, own zone draws and all that stuff. So you have to take that into account, too. I mean, if you put, I've said this on the show before, if you drop Grabowski in the middle between Ladd and Wheeler, I'm not sure if there's a discernible difference in production between him and Brian Little.
And similar one guy, type of player.
Yeah. And one guy gets 5 years and the other guy can't get a contract. Now, we don't know what he's asking for on a per-year basis, but I bet you it's not 4.7.
It's one of those guys who's out there. There's a whole list of interesting guys out there, and we'll probably touch on this more than once over the next couple of weeks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. When we come back, we'll discuss some of the moves in the NHL ownership ranks.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.IllegalCurve.com. This segment of the program is brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Very pleased to confirm that Rumors reopens this coming week after their extensive renovations. Steve-O, you know him from Jackass, he'll be at Rumors starting on Wednesday through Saturday. All the shows are sold out. There are limited tickets available for the Sunday shows, 7 p.m. and 9:45 p.m. If you want to go see Steve-O from Jackass at Rumors or visit or see any of the other comedians, check out RumorsComedyClub.com.
I don't know which nickname I like better, Remo or Steve-O.
I prefer Steve-O.
Remo, what do you think?
I'll go with Steve-O.
Why not Remo?
He's got the hyphen.
It's not even close. I mean, Remo is, that's what's up right now. I mean, Steve-O, he's big star, but Remo is the up-and-coming star. Yeah.
He's the station.
Remo was...
Actually, that's what we should start calling him.
The station.
I actually like that name. That's a good name.
Yeah. That's it. From now on, you're known as the station.
Okay, station.
Until it goes too much to your head in about an hour from now, and we have to cut you back down to size.
Oh, God. I'm just worried that people out there are going to getting pissed off from hearing of me. Been on every show.
Well, I know I am.
What show likes you best, Remo?
Probably you guys.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
We don't count, though.
Have we discussed that as a group before?
We'll take a vote after.
Okay, we'll take a vote after, and we'll get back to you.
I think it's got to be Hustler.
I'll say Rick is probably the least.
The one you work closest with. That makes a lot of sense.
No one was happier for
the one I spend time with every day.
Anyways, NHL ownership news for this past week. Where do you want to start? The finality or the beginning of an ownership, potentially saga?
Is the moratorium over?
Yeah, the moratorium on the Coyotes news is over on the show because the Coyotes ownership saga is now officially, at least for the next, I figure, 3 years before we start hearing rumblings.
What's really funny is that when we started the show, I think it was right around the time when that stuff started happening. That was back in 2009.
Sure.
So that's we outlasted
the Coyotes ownership struggle.
Mm-hmm. Thank God it's over, and thank God it's official.
Well, it's a joke, and it was mishandled by the league for whatever reasons. I don't know, because of who built the arena or whatever's going on there. But the team is almost surely not sustainable there. They were unable to sell the team to anybody with any kind of money and eventually settled on this deal, which seems not exactly a guarantee that they're going to be in Glendale for any period of time. I heard Anthony LeBlanc in interviews this week, mention the fact that, people go out to Glendale eight, nine times a year, including exhibition, to go see the Arizona Cardinals play. It's like, well, that's not comparable.
No.
Because that's like a religion in the States.
That's right.
Hockey is just another thing, and you have 40 times a year, not eight or nine. And it's not a party. You don't go Sunday morning and spend all day. You're going Thursday after work. It appears to me, in terms of Phoenix, there's a five-year out, Drew. $50 million of losses. And we were talking about it off air. If they lose $50 million over 5 years, maybe the franchise values in the NHL over that period of time, including the new Canadian TV deal and other increases of ticket prices, which are already outrageous, maybe the value of the team goes up over the period of time for $20 to $30 million, for example. So then you maybe lost $20 million actually. Then you have the ability to move the team. As soon as you move that team, it's worth $50, $60 million more. Mm-hmm. You've recouped
on top of whatever it grossed since then.
You've recouped your investment, and there you go.
For these
guys, they didn't even pay whatever money that they were actually allegedly paid. Mm-hmm. They didn't actually pay that amount. I heard Anthony LeBlanc in interviews. He wasn't going to say I paid that much in cash. He didn't.
No, it's all finance, this and takeover debt of that and everything else. There's nobody actually writing a check for $170 million at any point in time.
Drew, for all of the negativity associated with this, and there has been a lot of negativity, the arena has been empty for years. Jobbing.com arena, it's a beautiful arena, but it's been empty for years. And all the problems with ownership, who's going to buy the team? And we heard about possible ownership situations for years now. The one positive was that the Coyotes have been playing pretty well.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask.
And they didn't make the playoffs last year, but they made the playoffs in the years before that. And they still have a pretty good team. I mean, they've brought back Don Maloney. They've brought back Dave Tippett. They've brought in Mike Ribeiro. They're going to re-sign Mike Smith. You still have a lot of young, good players on that team. Now it's up to them to put people in those seats.
Make it a profitable franchise. That's what I wanted to ask you guys. What does the stability finally do for the Coyotes in terms of their on-ice potential and their on-ice product?
Does it do much? I mean,
yeah.
How much more are they going to spend this year? They're not going to be up at the $64 million cap ceiling, okay? Mm-hmm. They might bring in, we've mentioned some available free agents. Maybe they'll bring in one or two guys. But they have to drastically get more people in the seats there. And we're talking like doubling season tickets, tripling season tickets.
They have two roster spots available right now. So, they have to still sign Michael Bodker. And they have another spot. So, as he mentioned, they might add some guys, but they only have $6 million of cap space right now.
And Mike Ribeiro was a big signing.
It's almost impossible, if you have any aspirations of being a playoff team, to be, to not be close to the cap with it at the number it is right now.
And that's the thing. So people are talking about the Jets spending. Exactly. It's hard to not be at the cap.
The cap
so
is low.
Let's talk about, you mentioned that question you had was, okay, how does it change? Well, I don't know how much it changes, to be honest. I really don't know how much it changes. Don Maloney and Brad Treliving, who's been a guest on our show, have done a terrific job there. I don't think that can be questioned.
It's not like they're going to go and spend $10 million tomorrow.
If anything, they'll probably spend a little bit more with the NHL owning them, only because they get their budget, and that's what it is, as opposed to these owners actually, instead of 30 owners losing money or 29, it's one guy.
Sure.
He's like, damn, I'm losing a lot of money here. Let's go to exactly the bottom of the cap. So who knows? And who knows if the fans even notice? So I don't think it could be a good thing, but it could also be a bad thing, Drew. It could go both ways.
The other ownership issue this week in the NHL, in New Jersey, where, and we've heard about the Devils' financial problems going on for about 2 or 3 years at this point in time.
I thought there weren't any, according to the NHL.
Yeah, I know. The NHL's Pollyanna press releases are always quite enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Anyways, there's a couple of groups supposedly negotiating to take over and purchase the New Jersey Devils from Jeff Vanderbeek. He's the current owner of the Devils. Of course, they'd also get the rights to the arena there as well. Can the Devils be a marquee franchise in the NHL?
Not marquee. I mean, doing research before the show, you could tell that the Prudential Center is the eighth highest grossing arena in the world, I believe it was, or North America at least. So the arena's beautiful.
Because Bon Jovi plays all the time.
That's right. The arena's beautiful.
Yeah, it is beautiful. We've been there. You guys were just there for the draft.
It's beautiful. I mean, you can't beat that arena. It's as nice as you're going to get in the National Hockey League. The organization, for the most part, is as well-run as you're going to get with Lou Lamoriello. He questions some decisions, but for the most part, over the past 30 years, 20 years, how long he's been there, it's been a very well-run organization. The fans, while there aren't absolutely a ton, there's quite a bit, and they're very passionate. So why can't you make money? I mean, think about it. In the past couple of years, there's been financial troubles, and the Devils made a run to the Stanley Cup Final, and that's all money for them.
Let me ask you guys this. Knowing, I mean, it's the only arena, the only really viable arena in New Jersey. You know, mm-hmm. And people think, well, New Jersey is so close to New York, it's the same place. It's not. People from New Jersey aren't you know, traveling into Manhattan to see a concert, you know, on a nightly basis. And when a band comes through, they might play Madison Square Garden, but they're also looking for a place to play in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Can't the new ownership group, strictly on the basis of concerts, make that a financially viable organization?
Well, maybe, and we're talking about the guy who's Josh Miller, I believe is his name,
Josh Harris,
you know, with Philadelphia 76ers ties and such, apparently is worth $2.1 billion approximately. So the other issue is Jeff Vanderbeek is actually a fan of the Devils.
Yeah.
A guy, lifelong Devils fan, who bought the team a few years back and...
Right before the economic downturn.
Yeah, and he had a lot of aspirations for the team, and you know, some of them he reached, some of them he didn't. He certainly was generous on the contract side. I mean, that wasn't a question at all. But what you're dealing with is a guy who essentially, based on some of our reading, his value as a businessman was all tied up in the Devils. Whereas in this situation, you have a guy who's worth $2.1 billion and he can afford to maybe lose a few million dollars per year while the franchise value increases and he can look at other revenue streams. So that affords him more opportunity on the long term as opposed to Vanderbeek, who's always scratching by because he had tied up all of his assets, all of his equity in this team.
Let me just interrupt for one more second. And apparently Vanderbeek's financial troubles were so significant that he couldn't pay bands. He couldn't, you know, sort of front the band's money necessary to come play at the Prudential Center. So that affected the ability of the arena to really draw in more revenue.
Is that why Ezzy was playing the Saturday night of the draft when he was playing a show at the Prudential Center?
Yeah.
But you know what?
Ezzy works cheap.
No, but the situation with the Devils, we should mention too, the Forbes report came out. And
that's right.
$230 million of debt for the Devils, right? Mm-hmm. And then obviously they're going to deny it, but there's no reason to believe why that isn't accurate. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, Forbes is very reliable.
Yeah.
And, you know, give or take $5 million or $10 million, they're probably very close.
It's not a made-up number.
It's not a made-up number. And this is very different than the Phoenix Coyotes situation where the owner filed for bankruptcy, but this guy, Jeff Vanderbeek, is in a lot of debt. The amount of money that the Devils have lost over the years is not anywhere near the amount of money the Coyotes have lost.
Well, when Jerry Moyes filed for bankruptcy, he didn't want to own the team anymore. Jeff Vanderbeek has pretty much done everything under his power to hold on to the Devils.
He bought out the other partners recently.
Well, he's done everything under his power to hold on to the Devils despite all evidence that he wasn't going to be able to do it. Because as you mentioned, he is a Devils season ticket holder, a lifelong fan. So there certainly is a big difference in how they've gone about, you know, had he wanted to sort of screw the NHL, he could have put them into bankruptcy.
Absolutely.
But he didn't want to do it that way.
That's why they're looking for another owner. Right. They don't want to have a situation where they don't have an owner.
it's probably a heartbreaking situation for a guy like Vanderbeek, who's, you know, put his blood, sweat, and tears into this organization, just hasn't been able to make it work financially.
Supposedly, if the deal goes through, he'll maintain a minority ownership stake
in
the Devils.
Yeah, that's
very
important.
Sure that is important to him, you know, as an individual. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. 10 minutes before the top of the hour coming up, Adam Kimmelman from NHL.com is going to join us to talk about the World Junior Evaluation Camp and Tournament that's taking place in Lake Placid, New York. In about 40 minutes time, AJ Zeglin, a personal trainer, is going to join us to talk about off-season training as it relates to NHL players and really hockey players in general.
I'm really looking forward to that.
Your off-season training has been going very well.
Well, you know what? I'm doing better than I have been in the past.
On that long bike ride?
I did go on a bike ride. Shout out to Stefano Grande in downtown Winnipeg Biz. They put on a nice little bike.
Hold on. Why don't you give the whole story to the listeners?
What story?
The bike story.
There's no story. This is the story.
Well, why don't you talk about, you know, you're a little bit behind and explain to our listeners.
Well, I did fall behind a little bit.
It was a long bike ride.
It was 50K.
How far behind were you?
I was probably...
Tell the people exactly what the program is.
It starts at a downtown establishment.
No, as you will explain.
And for anybody out there, by the way, I recommend doing this. There's three left. It's Thursdays in August, put on by Downtown Winnipeg Biz. It's called Bike and Beer to Birds Hill. Birds Hill Bike and Beer.
Okay.
So the point is to experience some of the trails downtown, paths, mm-hmm. biking paths. You're only downtown for a little bit. Then you go, Henderson Highway to Birds Hill. So, and then you try a different bar downtown.
You come back after an end of the bar.
Right. So there was, you know, Pony Corral.
But hold on. But you were biking.
Right. And
how far is the bike ride?
It's 50K. 25K there and back. Okay. Something like that. I don't know exactly what it is, but something like that.
How far behind did you get initially?
I didn't fall behind until we got close to Birds Hill. But then I fell behind quite a bit. I probably fell behind a few kilometers. And then on the way back, I fell behind again. But
wasn't there a security guard who had to stay with you?
Richie, the fact that I didn't stop at Tim Hortons there or on the way back or stop at 7-Eleven, because there was a lot of 7-Elevens and McDonald's that I could have stopped
at. Hold on, but was there not a security guard who had to stay with you?
To make sure that I didn't steal his bike. No, I mean, there was someone from downtown Winnipeg Biz that was kind of making sure that, you know, nobody got lost or
hold on. And then
yes,
didn't you
behind with me?
Didn't you arrive at Birds Hill a couple of kilometers after everybody else, and then you got a standing ovation?
Yes, I did get a standing ovation. But it was, you know, in all seriousness, though, it was a lot of fun. And I don't know how we got around to this, but what I was trying to get to is that we're having AJ Zeglin on later, and I'm very excited, and he's excited. He's currently working with some NHLers at the Iceplex. He's the manager of Focus Fitness. And I think it's awesome because we actually haven't touched on that. And I think at various points, all of us have kind of changed our workout routines. We're not high-performance hockey players. Nonetheless, I think it's going to be a good segment.
Okay. I'm glad that we were able to
discuss
that.
Have you had a personal trainer before?
Have I had a personal
you
trainer
have.
Before?
You did. Yes. I remember you used to have one.
Not for a long term basis, but I'd do a consultation here or there just to make sure that I was performing at my peak physical fitness for my workout.
A consultation? What is that? Talking about maybe working out.
You
gotta make sure that your workout is, you know, is a quality workout. You don't want to be working out
when you press the buttons on the remote, Drew. I assure your fingers are getting a great workout.
I'll tell you what. I'm not the one here who's sitting with a broken finger. I can manage to play a softball game without injuring myself in the course of a very competitive beer league softball game, let me tell you.
Richie hit a home run that game, though.
All right, let's go.
The NHL and the Sochi Olympics have been in the news as of late.
Yep.
Because there's a lot of talk that the NHL or that the Olympics should be removed from Sochi as a result of their horrendous anti-homosexual laws that they've enacted.
Yes.
Now, first and foremost, we all condemn those laws, you know, to the nth degree. They're atrocious, and there's no place for them in society. What is your take? Do you think that the NHL should go to the Olympics, even though these laws are in place, especially given the NHL's ties to the You Can Play project?
I guess, you know, I'll give my opinion first, because I do think that what's happening in Russia is extremely unfortunate. And as you mentioned, we're going to condemn that. And we've talked about homophobia in sport and hockey and the You Can Play project. We've had Patrick Burke on the show before. We've talked about that, and we've given him kudos and cheers many times on the show for what he's doing, and Brian Burke as well. But this is a very complicated issue here. The Olympics are coming up. They're not that far away, 5 months away. And the timing of this, I think, is, again, it's a little bit unfortunate. I think that the fact that there is an online petition and George Takei was, you know, doing the rounds and promoting a boycott of the Olympics, I think this is all good, because it brings awareness to the homophobia that exists in Russia. That's good. You want to promote that awareness and hopefully, you know, change things for the better. But as far as boycotting the Olympics, I just don't think that's a realistic and rational approach to this. I mean, no offense to George Takei, but, you know, suggesting moving the Olympics to Vancouver 5 months before the Olympics is absurd. I think that his motivations are good, but, I mean, you don't just move the Winter Olympics 6 months or 5 months before they're supposed to take place.
It's a naive way of, you know, solving the problem.
Right.
What do you think, Richie?
Yeah, you know, I'm with Ezzy on that point. If you're going to be doing that campaigning, you might as well do it right when they announce the Olympics and look into the laws, and not 5 months before. I don't think that's realistic. In terms of what the NHL can do or the players can do there, you know, you can wear You Can Play hats after games. There's a lot of Olympic hardline rules, but, you know, try and at least promote it in that respect. Bring awareness to the issue. I think there's a burden probably on, you know, the CBC as well, who are covering this upcoming Olympics, to delve into that issue as well on air and such. So, you know, there are ways to raise awareness. You can, you know, you can go there, draw more attention to yourself. If you go to the Olympics, and there's, you know, whatever million amount of people watching the hockey, because everybody's going to be watching no matter what time of the day it'll be, and you talk about it there, you bring more awareness to the issue than if you don't show up at all. And I think that's the key. At the end of the day, you're showing them, I'm going to come, I'm going to tell you you're wrong, or we disagree, whatever it may be.
Well, in that case, wrong.
Yeah, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or you disagree, whatever it may be. Of course, it's wrong. I understand that. And what you're doing in that situation is, instead of just saying, it's wrong, I'm not going, you're saying, it's wrong, I'm going. I'm going to talk about how it's wrong. And I'm not going to only talk about it, because there are other, you know, you're going to go there and focus on the task at hand, but you're going to bring it up, or you're going to raise awareness, or you're going to wear a shirt, or you're going to wear a hat, and then make people think about it.
Right. And remember, guys, in 2008, Beijing, there were issues with human rights, and there were a lot of movements, and the fact is that the fact that we're talking about this is good. And to make change, though, is difficult. I mean, we're talking about a country halfway across the world and what's going on there. You know, I mean, this is, you know, to raise awareness is one thing, but to really change things is another. And I think that it's good that we're talking about this. But I think, you know, to the way that this movement has gone about affecting change, I think it's a little bit, I think, off base.
And let's be honest here, guys. The IOC is so corrupt.
Sure.
They're just taking anybody who gives them money. I mean, based on the research that people have done on this topic. So we're not talking, you know, do you think they're that concerned about it?
No, they're going through the window dressing to pretend.
Exactly.
But they're certainly not that concerned. Right. Before we go to break, congratulations in store to Canada's under 18 hockey team. They just won the gold medal at the Ivan Hlinka tournament.
Six in a row.
Six in a row for Team Canada at the under 18 team. They were able to beat the Team USA. So congratulations to all the young men who represented Team Canada at the Ivan Hlinka tournament. When we come back after the commercial break, Adam Kimmelman, Deputy Managing Editor, NHL.com. You're listening to TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, one hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the deputy managing editor of NHL.com. He's also live in Lake Placid, New York at the United States World Junior Hockey Development Camp, along with Team Canada, Team Finland, and Team Sweden. Adam Kimmelman, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well this morning. How are things in upstate New York?
Things have been great. We're actually at the last day of the camp today. We've got Canada, U.S. coming up at 1 o'clock Eastern here, and Finland and Sweden at 4:15. It's been a fun week, a lot of good hockey, a lot of good players. It's always a great thing, and it's nice to have Canada down for the first time this year.
Adam, we got to start. I mean, obviously, this is sort of the best hockey being played right now, almost anywhere in the world. Maybe the Ivan Hlinka is also up there, but I mean, this is some decent hockey with some certainly name brand players in this tournament. To your perspective, who has been the best player in the tournament so far?
Well, you know, it's hard to look at August hockey and say there has been dominant, you know, outstanding players. I think each team, they've had a couple of guys step up. I think Tuukka Teravainen and Artturi Lehkonen for Finland have been excellent. I think when you look at Sweden, they've really been banged up, so it's hard to kind of judge who's been good or who's not been good. Sebastian Kullberg and Jacob De La Rosa, a couple of Montreal Canadiens prospects, have looked good, but Kullberg tweaked his knee, so he's not going to play today. For Canada, I was really impressed by Connor McDavid and Sam Reinhart. I know everybody's sort of beating the drum with those guys, but you know, to see them live, you really see just how much skill and speed and the vision on the ice and hockey IQ, you can tell, is just off the charts with both of those guys. And I really liked the line that Canada put together the other night with Freddie Gauthier, Mark Jankowski, and Emile Poirier. Just, they didn't do a whole lot on the scoreboard, but just they look like an outstanding, what you would put together for a third line. Just big, heavy, strong, forecheck the heck out of the Swedes. They could barely get the puck out of their own zone. They looked very impressive. And for the Americans, I really like the way Nick Kardelis and Adam Ernie have played. I thought they kind of really have showcased themselves amongst maybe a not-so-strong group of American forwards, but I think those two guys definitely had the looks of potential offensive leaders for this American team that ends up going to Sweden.
Adam, you know, you mentioned Sweden. In terms of some of the players you see, look at the rosters. How many of these players won't be over in Sweden because they'll already be with National Hockey League clubs?
Well, I think you're going to lose at least two. I was talking to Rickard Grönborg, the Sweden coach today, and he told me he really does not expect to have either Philip Forsberg or Elias Lindholm with him. He thinks they'll be in the NHL, and most likely they will be. We saw Forsberg a little bit late last year with Nashville, and Jim Rutherford, the GM in Carolina, is going on the record to say he'd be shocked if Lindholm wasn't a big part of their team in Carolina this year. He also doesn't expect to have Hampus Lindholm, the defenseman, who's probably, if he's not going to be in Anaheim, he'll be in the American Hockey League this year. You know, so he's really, if he said if he gets any one of those three guys, he'll consider it a bonus, but he's really not expecting them. He's looking at guys like De La Rose and Kullberg and Oscar Sundqvist, the Pittsburgh Penguins prospect. He's really looking at those guys to be his guys going into the tournament. And he's okay with that. He's willing to take those guys. And outside of the game against Canada the other night, they really look good. They look very good against the Americans. I'm curious to see how they bounce back against the Finns here later this afternoon, but they looked really good. They looked relentless on the puck. Their forechecking is very good. Their defense is, you know, solid. It's pretty much exactly what you would expect out of a Swedish defenseman. You know, just solid, not spectacular, but no, very few mistakes. And their goaltending's been very good.
Adam, you mentioned Connor McDavid a little bit earlier as being a player who's impressed you, and he's projected, of course, to go very high in the 2015 draft. He's not eligible to 2015, but he's been very good for the Erie Otters. Is he expected to make this team? Because not a lot of 16-year-olds make either the Canadian or American teams. And can you elaborate on how he's looked on the ice so far in this tournament?
Well, I talked to Brent Sutter before the camp started and pointedly asked him, you know, do Reinhardt and McDavid specifically have chances? And he said point blank that he would be shocked if they weren't on the team. So, and they've done nothing from what I've seen a couple of days they've been here to change that thought. I think both of those guys, especially McDavid, they have real shots of being on this team. Now, it'll, you know, really be determined by what they do at the start of the season, you know. But if McDavid plays in Erie like he did last season, I have no doubt he'll be a part of this team, and he'll be a prominent part of this team in the top six role with you know, power play time, you know, for the Canadians. There's really no doubt. He's just, what I was really impressed by, this is the first time I've seen him live, was just the way his hockey IQ is off the charts. He's everywhere he needs to be, everywhere on the ice. The physical side of it really didn't seem to affect him at all. He got to the corners. He got to the net. He won battles along the wall. He was disruptive defensively. He showed his speed and his skill by taking the puck end to end. Yeah, there was really, he did not look out of place. He looked like in a 19-year-old tournament at age 16, he fit perfectly.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Adam Kimmelman. He's the deputy managing editor of NHL.com. He's in Lake Placid, New York at the World Junior Evaluation Tournament taking place between Team USA, Team Canada, Team Finland, and Team Sweden. Adam, we just were talking about Connor McDavid, and can you shed some light for our listeners on the incident that occurred that led to Max Domi sticking up for Connor McDavid?
Well, I think, you know, in a nutshell, you know, Tobias Tornquist, just, I guess he got a little yappy with McDavid, pushed him around a little bit, and Max just kind of jumped in and made sure nothing happened. And that's really not, and McDavid was, after the game, he's like, you know, that's not Max's game. He's not going to be the guy who's going to, you know, lead the charge into battle. But, you know, they very quickly here, this group, have gelled into a team. And that's sort of the mentality that they have. And I think Max said, if one guy gets into trouble, he's got four guys right behind him ready to step in and help. And, you know, Domi, I guess, just happened to be the closest to the situation to, you know, end things and then maybe said some things he probably shouldn't have to the referee to get the game misconduct. But, you know, it was something that it was a very chippy game. And, you know, I think the Swedish players got a little frustrated there late and you know, four goals down. You know, guys might have lost their cool a little bit, but, you know, it was, if you're a Canadian fan, if you're looking to see how this team is coming together and what kind of chemistry has already been generated, I think it's a positive sign in that regard.
You know, Adam, from a Winnipeg Jets perspective, of course, the fans here are quite excited about the selection of Josh Morrissey, and then Nick Batan in the second round really got some people excited. Can you talk at all about their games thus far in this short tournament?
Yeah, I think what you've seen with Batan is just he's really been able to use his speed and his skill, especially in the offensive zone, to create opportunities. And they've got him playing with Brendan Leafsick, his teammate in Portland, with the Winterhawks in the Western League. So there's that built-in sort of chemistry there, which has really helped both guys. And, you know, and Morrissey, again, you know, this whole Canadian team, you watched them, you know, first line through fourth, number one pair through number three pair. They really have not made any kind of mistakes where you look and you go, what was this guy thinking? Where is that pass going? And they've all just been, it's really been amazing to see how in such a short order, you've taken guys from all across the country, guys who have played different styles and different systems, you're playing them out of position, doing things that maybe they're not used to doing, and they've really gelled and come together as a team exceptionally well. And I think it's a great compliment to Brent Sutter and his staff and how he's just gotten 100% buy-in from the first moment these guys have been on the ice together.
Adam, we got to ask you about Eric Comrie, another Winnipeg Jets draft pick. He was selected in the third round in Newark, and he got the win on Wednesday against Finland. He was nice enough to come on the station. How did he look in his debut in the tournament?
You know, for a guy who hadn't played a competitive game in 7 months, there wasn't. Didn't seem like there was a speck of rust on him. You know, he was good. He you know, obviously were a little nerves early. Finland scored on the first shot against him, but he settled down real nice after that. I think not long after that first shot, Finland got a power play, and one of their players got two glorious chances right in the slot. He sprawled down and stopped them both and made a couple of really nice saves and, you know, kept that game close when Penn made a couple of mistakes and took a couple of bad penalties. You know, he really didn't look like he had, like a guy who hadn't played, coming off hip surgery, hadn't played in 7 months. He looked really good.
Final question now, you know, I guess as Canadian hockey fans over the past couple of years, you see different coaches behind the bench, and some of them almost look apprehensive. There's a ton of pressure, obviously, on the World Junior team, especially with the amount of media exposure that now comes with the tournament over the Christmas holidays. Brent Sutter, does he provide a stability that maybe hasn't been there since he left the head coaching reins of Team Canada?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it is a pressure situation. You know, the eyes of the nation are watching. You're really, you know, at least at the start, you're the only thing going on because the NHL is on break. And then by the time the NHL comes back, you're in the medal round, and it's serious play. You know, the games are broadcast throughout the country, all over the NHL network in the U.S. And it can be a difficult atmosphere. But Brent, you know, he's been through it. With you know, Team Canada, with the World Juniors in 05 and 06, he's been in the NHL. Nothing fazes him. To him, it's just another game. And I think that calm really spreads to the players because they know how tense it is. They all say how they've grown up every Christmas watching the World Juniors. It's a rite of passage. And, you know, now they're a part of it, and they know the next generation. They know everybody's watching them. But, you know, this team, they seem very calm and very in the moment. Nobody seems nervous or out of control or you know, letting the emotions get the best of them. You know, maybe in little bits and pieces here and there, but for the most part, they seem to be a very, you know, calm group, and I think that starts from the coach and makes its way through the locker room.
Adam Kimmelman, Deputy Managing Editor of NHL.com, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Take care, Adam. Thanks very much. Enjoy the last day of the tournament. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Let's go to break.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Drew, before we get into the next segment, we have to wish you a very happy birthday. Of course, it's the big 6-4, so Remus is queued up to the Beatles, especially with Paul McCartney coming to town on Monday. It's only fitting that we play When I'm 64 for your 64th birthday this past Wednesday.
Happy 64th, Drew.
You know what? I appreciate the regards from the two of you gentlemen, because I wouldn't expect anything different. I got to say, there is an issue, though. You guys were at the birthday celebrations last night.
Yep.
Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com was at the birthday celebrations last night.
That's true also.
A lot of our other friends.
Yes.
Some family. Maddie Leibel.
Was well attended.
Where was Remus, guys?
Remo?
Remus was not at the birthday party.
I had another party I had to go to.
Another party?
Another party.
You spend that much time with us and wow. I'm not priority number one?
I got the invite the day before you invited me.
Sorry, I didn't realize your busy social schedule of playing PlayStation and sleeping was going to get in the way.
You couldn't go to both?
I tried, but I fell asleep and ended up going to the other one late.
Hey.
And then you guys, you guys left early.
No, we didn't leave early. I don't know, we were there late.
I was there till midnight, and for a 64-year-old, that's really late.
Reem, it's okay. Now that you are, you know, the face of the station, you've become the big
station deal.
You know,
too good for us now.
It used to be Gary Lawless.
Yeah.
But now that Hustler has elevated Remus to number one on the station, he's in demand. Remus is in demand. If you want to hang out with Remus, you might have to, you know, book him a week in advance.
Yeah, Remus, obviously you need a week in advance to put in your schedule.
Yeah, you know, let me, who's your personal assistant? Who's your intern that I can contact next time to put my birthday down in your schedule for you?
I didn't know that you were having it. What do you want?
Yeah, because the birthday sneaks up on someone, you know. I didn't realize you were having a birthday this year.
Remus, on January 12th, we'll be sure to boycott, like the Canadians are supposed to boycott the Olympics.
There you go.
Fine. That's fine.
I want Gary to write an article about that in the Free Press.
Oh, we like to make fun of you because we love you, Remus. That, you know, that's the way
yes,
it works.
Yes, I'm sorry, Drew. I missed you. I did send you a birthday note. I texted you, I think.
How impersonal is a birthday text?
What did that text say?
Happy like 95th or whatever as he
tweeted. 95th.
Anyways, we're just kidding with you, Remo. You're all good, buddy.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. 25 years ago yesterday was the anniversary of the Wayne Gretzky trade.
Yep. Was it?
Yeah, I know it's gone under the radar and hasn't been talked about that much this week. You know, there haven't been any stories about it, but I figured we'd spend a couple minutes discussing. I didn't spend much time worrying about it because I was working on the big Penske file at that point in time, 25 years ago. But as young as you guys, as we all were when that deal happened, you know, what do you think the greatest takeaway from the Gretzky trade was, looking back at it 25 years ago?
You know, we're joking. Richie's joking, obviously. We've been hearing about this. There have been some great articles. You know, the King's Ransom was on recently, the documentary produced about the Gretzky trade. But the Gretzky trade itself, for me, might have been the most emotional, as Remus sneezes with his mic on.
Yeah, thanks, Remus. Turn the mic off.
Keep talking. Tried you. I didn't get there fast
enough. That might have been the most, the Gretzky trade of 25 years ago might have been the most monumental trade in all of pro sports, because there was so much, like Richie, there's so much going on with that trade. I mean, it was almost Canada's greatest hockey player, greatest athlete perhaps of all time, basically being sold to the U.S., mm-hmm. being sold to L.A. You know, like he was traded, but it was like taking something away from not just Edmonton. Forget about the city of Edmonton, which was devastated. It was a country, right? And, you know, the takeaway, though, I think, you know, it was difficult and all that, but the probably the best part about it was that Gretzky had such an impact on growing the sport in California and the non-traditional hockey markets. So, and it turned out that Gretzky made hockey sexy in L.A.
It got the NHL a TV deal. It allowed for expansion.
Yep.
It changed the face of the league.
Yes. One guy did that, Richie. One guy.
One guy. And there hasn't been a big trade, as big of a trade, I think, in any of the other four major sports over the court. Maybe Babe Ruth was purchased, right?
Babe Ruth was purchased, yeah, but was in 1919. So,
right.
I mean,
so when you were born. But, you know, when we're talking about Gretzky, there's no other trade that is anywhere close to that level of importance. And I think, you know, you look at it from the Edmonton perspective, well, they probably would have won 8-9 cups. I mean, they won 5, one without him. They probably would have won 8 or 9. I mean, the conference finals, I believe, 91 and 92. Absolutely loaded roster. And, of course, that team essentially just went over to New York and won another cup. So, I mean, who knows how many they could have won. I think he said in that documentary, that 30 for 30 with Peter Berg, I believe is his name.
Yep, Peter Berg.
That he would have won, I think, 8, I think was to say, or maybe 10. So, you know, they it obviously changed the face, and Edmonton kind of went after those cups. Was, you know, the gap in terms of spending money was significant. I think it's interesting too in terms of the guys involved. Peter Pocklington, who seems like the unfriendliest man on the face of the earth, and Bruce McNall, who seems like the friendliest guy, but essentially bought Wayne Gretzky with other people's money.
Yes.
The other interesting thing, you know, I heard a Peter Pocklington interview this week, and he said this is how significant the trade was. They gave him $15 million cash. Plus all the other, you know, Jimmy Carson, who fizzled it out,
yep.
mm-hmm. amazingly so, if you look at his stats before he fizzled it out, the draft picks, you know, et cetera. But $15 million it cost them to get him, plus the other stuff. And the gate in L.A. before Gretzky was there was $4 million in 87, 88, I guess, before 88, 89, because that's the last year they won the cup. And the year after Gretzky went to L.A., the gate went from $4 million.
For the entire year, you're
saying. Yeah, sorry. From $4 million for the entire year to $23 million. So he already made up for that purchase, and more than made up for that purchase in the span of one season.
Sounds like a good investment.
And he made hockey sexy. And I think, you know, that can be understated as well. And I think also Bruce McNall said this week, you know, there was no team from L.A. to St. Louis. And you can't have a TV deal unless you have teams in, you know, Colorado and San Jose. And I'm not sure Anaheim was necessary, but, you know, Phoenix, whatever it may be, and Dallas and all that stuff.
We had Dave Naylor was on the Rona Roundtable yesterday. Mm-hmm. And
you did a great job hosting, by the way.
Thank you. And I asked him, you know, what's the greatest, you know, sort of similar question to what I asked you guys and the greatest takeaway from it. And he said it was the birth of hockey in the United States, and it was almost the death knell for hockey in Canada, at least for, you know, for 20 years or so.
Yeah, but think about it for a second, guys. We're not talking about, you know, the 15-year anniversary that Gretzky retired. We're talking about when he was traded. Like, we're celebrating the trade. Not even, like, his career. It was the trade. But we really are celebrating his career, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
You're not gonna celebrate any other trade in the NHL. I mean, Gretzky is synonymous with hockey. Like, Jordan is synonymous with basketball.
That's right.
And we're celebrating the trade because it was such a significant it was like a huge change in the sport of hockey. Like, that trade changed a sport in the sense that you were seeing a guy move to a team and you knew everything was going to change. And that's why I think it's so fascinating when you watch the press conference, and we've all seen the press conference from 1989, and you can see how much sadness is in Gretzky's eyes, but you also know that there's so much. It's like everything was going
to
change after that. You knew that was because he was in the prime of his career at that point. You know, like, I'm not talking his point totals never got higher after that.
Sure,
but you could tell. I mean, you know, he had a lot of hockey left. He had another 10 years.
He almost transitioned from a hockey player at that point to being the face of hockey.
And he is the face of hockey today.
Right.
The NHL would pay him back the money they owed him in Phoenix, he'd really be the face of hockey still. But God knows why they're not doing that.
Well, I
think that needs to be brought up here, though, guys, because the face of hockey is Wayne Gretzky, and Wayne Gretzky, for the most part, has been completely uninvolved in the game.
He pops up maybe once or twice a year. He'll give a radio interview or something, but he'll show up at a random game in New York or in Los Angeles. But you're absolutely right. I mean, the NHL should go to Wayne Gretzky and say, just tell us what you want us to write in the check every single year, and you go be our world's greatest ambassador for the game.
Yep, and they're
stubborn?
Too stupid to do it. Stubborn is a factor, stupid. And so, you know, he's not involved right now. Why is he not involved? You know, you hear the rumors of MLSC, but why is he not involved? Because, you know, while he's not actively involved in the NHL, you better believe that guy knows everything about every player in the league still. And I think he'd be better in a management role. I've said that.
You know, and you know what? I don't really care. I mean, if he joins a team, that's fine, and that's going to be good for him, and that's his decision. The NHL should just want him to be almost their roving ambassador.
Yep.
You know, if Wayne Gretzky handed out every single trophy that the NHL gives away, first of all these guys that are winning these trophies now grew up playing hockey largely because of Wayne Gretzky, and they're, you know, they all idolized Wayne Gretzky. So, I mean, like I said, if you write him a check every year for $10 million, whatever that cost is, you're getting back tenfold because of the importance of having him around the game, and that almost as much of some of the other things Gary Bettman has done, but his refusal to make things right with Wayne Gretzky, and again over how his wife was treated, how Janet was treated, over that gambling nonsense that was really nonsense, is another pox on the legacy of Gary Bettman as an NHL commissioner.
I agree. You got you. It's not even up for debate here. I mean, he's got to be involved with the NHL. He's got to. I mean. And, you know, the Phoenix thing didn't work out, and it's time to move on here.
Write him his check. It's that simple. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, AJ Zeglin is going to join us to talk about some personal training and training hockey players in the off season. You're listening to TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, he is the manager of Focus Fitness at the MTS Iceplex, AJ Zeglin. AJ, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning to you guys, too. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
AJ, we want to have you on to talk about sort of off-season training programs. And, you know, we figured you're as good of an expert on that topic as anyone else. So let's get right into it. At this juncture in the off-season, what areas are you focusing on with players to help them prepare for training camp and the upcoming season?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, at this juncture of the off season, a lot of guys are about 3 to 4 weeks away from going into camp. So we've shifted a little bit. When they first start out with us, there's a really big emphasis put on strength, because every athletic attribute that you can have or possess is linked back to your strength base. So now that we've developed that to the best of their abilities with the time frame that we're working with, we start shifting into a lot more explosive power and speed at this time of year. And then, of course, we also want to make sure that their conditioning is also at their peak, because training camps aren't used for getting guys in shape anymore. Guys need to show up at training camp already in their peak shape.
AJ, you know, aside from traditional weight training methods, what are some of the other training methods that you employ?
You know, we do a little bit of everything. I mean, we have the traditional weights. We have some kind of untraditional that are actually, to be honest, becoming a little more traditional now. I'm sure everyone's seen people out there swinging sledgehammers, flipping tires, pushing and pulling sleds, carrying kegs and barrels and stuff. So that stuff, which was usually not so kind of common a couple of years ago, is really kind of starting to creep its way into the mainstream. We obviously do a lot of that work for just conditioning and strength purposes. We've brought in a little bit of everything for the guys. We bring in a boxing instructor to work with them, to switch up their conditioning a little bit. His name's Rylan Qualley. We bring in a yoga instructor, Darlene Svensson, to work with the guys a bit too, just to stay on top of their mobility. And it's really, a whole puzzle putting together the guys' off-season training programs, and all of those just play a little piece to it.
AJ, you've worked with some Jets, and you're currently working with some other NHL players that are in Winnipeg training the off-season. And when you're designing these specific programs for each player, because I imagine, you know, there are no two training programs that are alike. Obviously, you do similar exercises and drills. But how do you know ultimately if a specific something specific is working for an NHL player? Like, will you get feedback? Will they call you and, you know, let you know that, you know, they really like that and they'll come back into town and do it again? What kind of feedback do you get so you know that something's really effective for a certain area, whether it's like speed or strength?
Right. Well, we have a couple different ways to measure feedback. Obviously, we do have some testing that we can do with the players, some physiological testing, which would give us data back on, on their explosive power or their VO2 max, which is their aerobic conditioning. We could test their anaerobic conditioning, stuff like that. Obviously, some strength tests using weights and stuff. Some guys have certain goals that are also measurable in the fact of they're looking to get down a certain body fat percentage or a certain weight, or the other way, they're trying to gain some weight. So those numbers are actually measured, on a scale or whatnot. And then, the best feedback that you can always get from a guy is just verbal feedback. I had a really great mentor when I first started out in the business named Glenn Carnegie, and he taught me that training is all about building relationships with the guys. So the better the relationships you can build, the better chance that they're going to be honest in giving you good, honest feedback. And that's going to help you, help construct the most beneficial program for the guys. And, once you got that good relationship, you build that trust. And then you see them, they come back year after year. And we now have guys that come back and see us in the summers that, really don't live in Winnipeg anymore permanently or anything like that, but they come back we're like a training destination for them in the off-season.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by AJ Zeglin. He's a personal trainer here in Winnipeg, discussing training programs for hockey players in the off-season. AJ, in your time as a personal trainer, what's the biggest change you've noticed in off-season training for hockey players, NHL players specifically?
You know what? I'd say one of the biggest changes is just a little bit in the change in the direction of there used to be a little bit of an old school mentality where guys used to go for a lot of long runs, like just, okay, I'm going to go for a jog and, you know, jog 10 miles a day or something like that. There's been a real shift kind of out of that. Some of the older guys still prefer that because that's what they came up with and that's what they're used to. But a lot of the younger generation is just kind of switching to doing a lot more sprint work, a lot more what we call anaerobic work. So it's more intense bouts of exercise over a shorter period of time. And then also working on recovering. So obviously you can see the carryover in a sport like hockey, training that way. You know, hockey's a bunch of short bursts of speed or explosive power on the ice. In between then you're gliding, and in between that you're on the bench. So it's, you know, how fast and how hard you can go for a short period of time, and then how quickly you can recover till you're out on the ice for the next shift so you can do it again. And I'd say that's probably about the biggest changes. They found a lot more benefit to training more anaerobically as opposed to the aerobic training.
You know, AJ, for younger Jets prospects, the Jets just had their development camp come through town. How do you deal with those players? I mean, they're young guys. They're 18, 19 years old. How do you deal with their diets? Like, do they come in with diets that are like Ezzy-like, or do they come in and they're already eating a kind of a healthy diet?
You know, that's funny you mention that. I took notice of one of Ezzy's. I don't know if it was a Facebook post or a tweet, but he made mention to sitting around all day in his sweatpants eating Fudgios watching Shark Week. So I'm not quite sure. Hopefully, yeah, the guys that are coming in have a little bit better diet than that. But you know what? To be honest, more and more we're seeing a lot more guys that are educated about that kind of stuff at a lot younger age. Obviously, as you guys know, hockey players are being developed and being scouted and stuff at a younger age, and nutrition is just as an important part as the rest of the off-ice training. So people are starting to stress it and kind of educate and teach these players. Teams are doing it. Guys that these players train with are doing it. So by the time the guys reach a level coming into like the Jets development camp, they've already got some pretty good exposure to it, especially the younger guys in this generation. So, but I mean, there are some changes. Some guys just, you know, it's just a general, I guess, understanding and awareness of everything that you put in your body, you know, can have a positive or negative effect on the goals that you're trying to achieve. And, you know, you got to remember too that these guys are, like you said, some of them are 17, 18, 19 years old. So we could all remember probably, what our diets were like at certain times of the week when we were that age. Mm-hmm. Probably weren't the best, and these guys are still young men, and so that's to be expected. But you know, just keeping them properly hydrated, making sure they're getting enough the protein and carbohydrates and stuff after a skate, after a workout. Obviously, recovery is one of the most vital parts, especially when you're playing hockey at that level, because the schedules are so intense and so condensed that, you know, you want it, recovery is just optimal for being able to perform day after day after day after day. So we really stress that with the guys. I'd say is probably the number one thing.
So AJ, we've been talking about, you know, guys that you work with that are in the NHL, various levels of pro hockey, and also future Jets and NHLers. But, you know, we have a lot of younger hockey players that listen, a lot of parents of younger players, you know, 8 to 17, you know, a little bit younger. And, you know, we wanted to talk to you a little bit about that, because nutrition and training is a huge part of hockey as you go through and you get into more of the AA and AAA. For parents of younger hockey players out there who think that their children should go into an off-ice training program. And Richie and I coached hockey in the 13-year-old age level, and some parents thought that we should do some dry land training. But what's the advice that you give to those parents who are thinking that they want their kids to enter an off-ice training program?
Right. Well, I guess there'd be a couple things. One thing would be you definitely want to go to someone with the you know, proper credentials, so you know what they're doing, especially when your kid's at a young age. You want to make sure that the person or people that they're working with are qualified to work with them. Now, that being said, you know, I mean, one of the big questions is a lot of people want to know how young is too young, or, you know, what's the minimum age that they should start. It really depends on the athlete, so on the boy or the girl when they're starting. Every kid is at a different level. So unfortunately, you know, when it comes to physical capabilities, we all weren't created equal, and some kids develop a little later than others. So every kid has an age, and then we like to say every kid also has a training age. So just necessarily because a kid is 18 years old, you know, and we might have a kid that's 14 years old that's already been working with us for a year, and a kid that's 18, if he comes in and he has no experience, his training age is still at a zero, where that 14-year-old, their training age is at one. So if he's actually further ahead, you know, than that other kid, it doesn't matter that he's younger or older. He just has more experience, and he's already been taught a little bit about, you know, how to effectively and efficiently control his own body. So one of the big things is obviously just getting in with someone, like I said, who knows what they're doing, and then, you know, having those people, you know, assess and build something for them correctly. A lot of parents also have a lot of questions about strength training, because they think when they start and they associate strength training with, oh, you know, my kid's going to get in there and he's going to put a 400 pounds on his back and try to squat it, and he's going to get hurt, or it's going to stunt his growth, or just, there's all sorts of kind of misconceptions and stuff out there like that. When you're starting strength work, which is vitally important, we just start with the athlete just efficiently learning how to move their own body weight. So, you know, push-ups or body weight squats or anything like that. You know, your kid should never be put under any sort of load, like external load from weights or anything, until they've proven that they can efficiently move and control their own body weight. And once they've done that, then they progress to the next level. And there's different ways to load them up there, too. That's obviously, you know, putting the kid in the best position to be successful.
Now, AJ, as far as nutrition goes, we were talking about Winnipeg Jets development camp and, you know, 18-year-olds changing their diet. But as far as the younger hockey players, and for the parents of those younger hockey players, you know, what are you trying to instill in them as far as, you know, developing good nutritional habits? And what are maybe just quickly some of the common misconceptions about nutrition that you'd like to share with people as far as what they might think that their kids should you know, put in their body, and how that might help them become a better hockey player?
Right. You know, that's a great question, because it is an area that has a lot of misconceptions about it. The question of supplements and supplementation always comes up when you talk nutrition, especially with kids, because, you know, a lot of it's marketed towards them, and they're always wondering, should I go buy this or take this? So, first of all, we always like to look at everything, building everything on a proper foundation, and that's just done by eating just real food. So, and by real food, I just mean real whole food. So, you know, meats, vegetables, fruits, carbs too. Carbs are not the enemy, like, are not as bad as everyone makes them sound out to be. You need that. It's your number one source of fuel. And as an athlete, you really need that, when you're competing or training. What a lot of people want to do is try to supplement, but you don't want to supplement until that foundation is set. And so we really, really don't advise anyone to do any of that until their eating habits are 100% down. And if your eating habits are 100% down pat and you got it all locked in and you got that great foundation, you're going to find out that you probably don't even really need to supplement, because everything that your body needs, you're already getting from the whole natural foods that you're eating. You know, another big one, too, is just about the sports drinks, because everyone's always wondering, oh, you know, should I drink this or that? I mean, water is always your best choice, especially when you're talking with young kids. Anything that's energy drink or anything like that is always just, like, a lot of sugar, a lot of caffeine, a lot of other stuff like that that you don't really need. I know some people think it'll give them energy or get them up for a game, but, you know, the reality is, that nothing will hydrate you better than water. And, you know, at that age or at any age, you know, in any sport I ever played, I always thought that if I needed help from anything else to get me excited about playing, then I probably shouldn't be playing anymore. So, you know, you're just going to get that energy and that desire and want to play it just for the fact that you love playing the game. And but I'd say those two about the I guess, you know, nutrition wise, water is always your best choice to drink. And as far as getting the nutrients and stuff that you're looking for, actual real whole food is always your best choice as well.
AJ Zeglin is a personal trainer and the manager of Focus Fitness here in Winnipeg. AJ, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Some great insight into the training and nutrition and everything else that goes into being a professional athlete.
Hey, no problem, guys. Thanks for having me on. And we have an open invitation anytime you guys want to come down. I know you guys were talking about working with trainers or anything like that or getting on workout programs. You guys are always invited to come down, see us at Focus Fitness, and we'll hook you guys up.
Appreciate that very much, AJ. Thanks very much for that, bud.
Thanks
a lot, AJ.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
One final segment here this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richie, you have something that, like, you said to check our emails. I'm checking my email.
No,
I don't
text,
have anything.
Text.
Oh, my text. I apologize. You wanted to take over.
Well, last night, I left your birthday, Drew, and as he says, all right.
What
all right.
is that?
So hold on. Let's tell
Why didn't you send it to me?
I didn't want you knowing. Last night, I leave this establishment that we're at last night, and it's about, I think, 1 o'clock probably, and Eddie says, okay, good. I'm back from vacation tomorrow. I'll pick you up at 8:30. And I said, okay, that's for sure 9 o'clock, and I'm going to go without you. And, and he starts laughing. Showed up at about, I think it was 9:15 today. Anyhow, as he stayed out, you know, we went to bed. As he's back, you know, as he's on vacation, though, I guess his vacation didn't end until 10 o'clock this morning. So, Ezzy was out till all hours of the night, and, of course, his roommate has sent us a picture of whatever he was putting in the microwave at 6 or 5 in the morning, and I don't know what it is. It looks like we should tweet it out to
can
our.
We,
our
no,
yeah,
no,
tweet, it
tweet
out.
It
tweet
out.
It out.
I'll
yeah.
tweet it.
It's fine. Like a soup with a cracker in it. What is it?
Is that matzah?
What is that?
It looks like wassa crackers.
It is wassa.
Is that a tomato bisque?
Okay. Yes. Okay. Last night,
did you bake a bowl of ketchup and wassa crackers?
Last night when I got home, it was. I haven't shopped in a while. I don't have a lot of. This isn't probably a good follow-up to AJ Zeglin of Focus Fitness coming on and talking about what to do properly. But hey, I for kids out there, you definitely don't want to follow what I eat if you've ever listened
or
to the
drink.
Show or drink. But I think I know what it is. I got home last night and it made a bowl of soup because I didn't have a lot.
What kind of soup?
Tomato soup, and I put those wassa crackers or whatever.
That is so mad.
And
man.
I actually like probably only ate like half of it.
Well, it was 6 a.m, so like, you know, that would have been cereal time. That's
yeah.
not tomato soup time.
I don't know. It at the time it felt like a it felt right, so I did it.
What is that?
I love how my roommate is now a source of information for Illegal Curve.
Illegal Curve news, bruh.
Brought to you by.
That's Hart. Roommate Hart. He puts up with me. Anybody who, puts up with me, we own a house together. He's a good guy, and I apologize. I'll come do the dishes when I get home.
Oh, it's for sure still sitting in there. There's definitely still soup in that bowl. 100%.
There's no question about it.
So. Yeah.
It's good soup, though. I think it was a Campbell soup.
You know, the Pittsburgh Penguins hired Jacques Martin as an assistant coach this week. What do you think of that move?
I think it's a good move, Drew, because I think Jacques Martin is a good tactician, and he doesn't have he's not the most
fiery guy.
Yeah, fiery guy. Maybe personality isn't his strong suit. I think X's and O's is his strong suit. Development of young players. He did a very good job developing young players in Ottawa. Even Florida and Montreal. He did a good. I think for the most part, maybe he hasn't been that championship level coach, but he's certainly been a very successful coach. And I think Pittsburgh. Why I think he works there. They talked about the development of young defensemen, and they have a lot. Olli Mäta and Derek Pouliot, and of course Chris Letang, still young, and other players they have in that system. But I think also, if you watch that Pittsburgh Penguin team play, the defensive accountability on that roster, and just the structure, I don't know if it's style or it's executing the game plan put forth by Dan Bylsma, but defensively they're lax. And I think Jacques Martin should be a helpful hand in tidying that up a bit. I think it's a good hire.
I am a huge Jacques Martin fan, and he was a coach for the Canadian team at the Olympics. He was a great coach for the Ottawa Senators for all those years. Good coach with the Montreal Canadiens, and we all know how that ended up. But you know, they're bringing on a third coach here. Tony Granato and Todd Reirden are the current assistants with the Pittsburgh Penguins. So they're bringing on a third assistant coach, which is significant. I mean, we know the whole, you know, all the joking around about Torts only had the one assistant in New York. But if you think for a second, Richie, that this isn't this hire isn't has a lot to do with the defense, I think you're kidding yourselves. I think Jacques Martin is going to have a lot of influence on Chris Letang. And Chris Letang, guys, was a Norris finalist, but he didn't play well in the playoffs, and he's had, you know, issues focusing. He's one of the greatest skating defensemen in the NHL. But I think Jacques Martin is going to have a lot of influence on that decor, and specifically Chris Letang. You know, a lot has been talked about, rightly so, about the job he did with Wade Redden and Chris Phillips in Ottawa, right? And So, I mean, Jacques Martin, if he's your assistant coach, you easily have, in my opinion, the best assistant coach in the NHL, because he's been there and done that at every level. So,
give him credit too for becoming an assistant coach. A lot of guys who are those head coaches and big dogs for a while, GMs and head coaches, as he's been, are reticent to go back to be an assistant.
Right. And he was assistant with Colorado, was he not?
I think he was. Yes, that's right. Him and Quinville, right?
Yep.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pollock.
Gary Bettman's getting my jeer this week because he says we can't have enough outdoor games. And he couldn't be more wrong. I think we should give him an outdoor office in New York in the middle of winter.
Yeah,
come on, it's a joke.
I know a press box that's outdoors where he could work.
That's a good point. He's already ruined it. Simply for a cash cow.
Yep.
So I know the owners also obviously are a factor there, and they're his boss at the end of the day. But come on, you've already ruined this good thing, and now you're telling us we want more. Who? I'd like to know who it is.
You're not wrong.
I know, and just quickly, the games outside aren't good. That's the most...
the quality of ice.
Yeah, the quality, just because they're outside. But just quickly, I'm going to do a serious cheer, actually. I'm going to cheer Steve Ludzik. Mm-hmm. He actually announced earlier this week that he's been living with Parkinson's disease.
Yes.
And he's had it for a while. And, you know, just quickly, I mean, you know, we know that it's a horrible disease. And he is raising money to raise awareness and
golf
everything.
Golf tournament this weekend.
And for him to come out and say that a lot, it might be... from injuries that he suffered in his playing career might be, you know, causing that. I think it takes a lot of cojones to do that. And just quickly, I think he deserves my cheer.
He was on the score back in the day with Dennis Bayak.
Yes,
remember.
And that's right.
Kulias, I believe.
So big cheer to Steve Ludzik. Right. Love him. Great commentator. And he
always wore a three-piece suit.
Yep.
Back before Claude Noel made it fashionable.
Yeah, coached the Lightning, of course. Yeah.
Exactly. He coached the Ice Dogs too, didn't he? For Grapes, did he?
Yeah, I think he may have.
May have.
Yeah, you might be right. I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer Buffalo Sabres play-by-play man Rick Jeanneret.
Yes.
He announced that he signed a new 3-year contract, and he announced ahead of time when those 3 years are up, that's going to be his retirement date.
Yep. So he's
a legend in Buffalo. Some of his calls are famous. You can hear the Mayday call
We can get him on once. Try to get him on.
Sure. There you go.
He's being eventually replaced by Dan Dunleavy, who's Rick Ralph's former colleague.
That's right. Dan Dunleavy used to be in Toronto.
Yeah.
Now he's going to join in Buffalo, sort of as a you know, mentorship sort of program, and then he's going to step in and take over from Rick Jeanneret in Buffalo.
Yeah, you know what, Rick Jeanneret, one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And this show was our Seinfeld show. Has there ever been a great show like this about nothing?
I'll tell you what, the most popular thing about this show so far, undoubtedly, is the picture we tweeted of Ezzy Soup.
A lot of retweets.
It's popular out there on the internet right now. Anyways, that's it for this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guest, AJ Zeglin. He's a personal trainer for joining us. And Adam Kimmelman, deputy managing editor of NHL.com. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes, on IllegalCurve.com, and on TSN1290.ca. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, and the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba.
You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com. I'm off next week, boys, so you're going to be on your own. Hopefully you can fill my shoes. I don't think it'll be that big of a problem for you guys to do that. I'll be back in 2 weeks. For my colleagues Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock, for producer Michael Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.